I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Hello, I'm Scott Soschnick.
And I'm Evan Novy Williams, and this is the TikTok T-Wolves sports business podcast, The Sportacast.
A lot of pressure on you because I gave you such high praise last time. You may have overthought this one.
We're back to the standard, I don't get it.
Explain to me because especially nowadays when you say TikTok, I'm thinking the platform. I'm thinking being banned in the United States. I'm thinking ByteDance. I'm thinking government relations. I'm not thinking like. Are you talking about like a TikTok? A little history of what's gone on with it?
I was thinking the clock is ticking on Alex Rodriguez and Mark Lowry's attempt to purchase the Minnesota Timberwolves.
Okay, well, let me ask though. Now, if you're doing something like this, somebody, and you point at your watch, so would you say TikTok, TikTok, or would you say tick, 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 tick? You go TikTok, TikTok. Or tick, tick, tick.
You think tick, tick, T-Wolves? I think TikTok.
I wouldn't tick anything T-Wolves, but anyway.
We said before we started we were going to go on some tangents here. This was not
Today had a total feel of a tangent day. I don't know why. Maybe there's a lot going on. We had a miscommunication where you were waiting for me to record. The usual room that you use, I can see from where I am, and it was unoccupied. So I thought you were busy. And I did check, by the way, with some of our colleagues. I said, does anybody know where Evan is? And one, Matt Bach, said to me, he's on a phone call.
Uh-huh.
So I thought you were somewhere else on a phone call. So maybe we'll just blame Matt. But we started off with a Three's Company-esque miscommunication. Do you watch Three's Company? Do you know Three's Company? Do you know Mr. Roper? Three's Do you know Company. Any of that?
No.
I'm going to encourage
you to
watch this.
That before you asked me.
Yeah, I did. But you know, you don't. Joyce DeWitt, Suzanne Summers. John Ritter, you know, nothing sounds
right. I know who John Ritter is, but that's
okay. So, yeah, anyway, whatever. There's a scene in there where Mr. Roper, the character, he turns to the camera every now and then when he thinks he makes a funny or he's making fun of his wife. So I'm going to do that now, and I'm going to encourage everybody, see if we get to the get people to go to check out the video. If this sets a record for our video. But this is what he would do. He'd make a wisecrack, and then he'd give you one of these. Into the camera. Anyway, give me some TikTok tick tick.
Yeah, let's talk T-Wolves.
The T-Wolves, because like the news is that private equity giant Carlyle, which was going to be backing the current raise, I mean they are up against it to complete this purchase from Glenn Taylor. Carlyle is not going to be a participant in this fundraising round, which I would say leaves a $300 million hole for Alex and Mark Lowry?
Probably something close to that. Yeah, and we've talked about this on the show before. This takeover of the Timberwolves is one of the weirder deal structure modern sales that we've seen in sports in the past decade. And it continues on. A-Rod and Mark Lowry bought 20% of the T-Wolves 2 years ago. They bought another 20% of the T-Wolves this year.
By the way, path to control is not an odd thing. That is not an odd thing that you would have, you know, buy a piece and have a path to control. That is not the weird part.
It's very structured, and they are, right now, Scott, they have less than 2 weeks. End of March is their deadline for closing on the third piece of this transaction. The 40% that will get them to 80% will get them a control stake in this team. And as you said, less than 2 weeks before, as we reported, Carlyle, the main backer of this set of money, pulled out. Had been talking to the NBA for a while.
Wait, hold on. I'm jumping in.
Yeah.
Did you just say? And I want to know this set of money. Is there another finance term that perhaps we could utilize to describe this set of money, Evan?
You read my mind? Exactly. I've been told I say the word tranche too much, and this is a tranche of money. But I was deliberately using set. And,
this
and
set
you,
of
you read
money.
That exactly.
Made you sound like exactly you had just taken fourth grade economics, and you're like, this set of money.
You saw right through that.
Transparent, my God.
So they have until the end of March to close on another 40% of the team that will get them that controlling stake. According to the deal points, if they don't close within that time, maybe they can get an extension, maybe they can't, we'll see. If they don't close within that time, the whole thing falls apart. They don't have the right to buy any more. They end up just being 40% equity holders, the 40% they've already bought, minority holders in a team controlled by Glenn Taylor. And they need to find the money, Scott. It's remarkable to me. And we can get into the price in a second because it's a critical part of this whole thing.
Well, we said right off the bat, you're like, wow, they're getting a good deal.
$1.5 billion on the first payment. Small escalators from what we understand, but keeping it in the one point something the whole way through. This team, you could make an argument this team might be worth $3 billion now, right? I think of it as almost a 50% off coupon in financing an acquisition.
Well, you and I know, by the way,
team.
We think that they know they got a good deal because when they went out to seek capital, yeah, it was at a much higher valuation. So, you know, a lot of the people who were approached were like, wait. You just paid X. It's been, what, 3 weeks? You know, a month, two, whatever it is. And now you want X, you know, multiple of X? And people said, no, thank you. So something tells me they knew they got a good deal and thought the team was worth more, but other people really weren't willing to pay that price.
So three interesting things here that I want to get
three.
To.
Three interesting. Are you going to go? Are you going to delineate them for us? Like, okay,
I will.
One.
I will.
Okay,
number one.
Yes.
Carlisle, from what we have been told, had been in talks with the NBA on the financing here for months. And the two could not reach an agreement on how this thing could be structured for Carlisle to be comfortable wanting to do this deal. The NBA has opened its doors to private equity. It has opened its door to at least one sovereign wealth fund in the past year. Institutional capital is coming into the NBA. But Carlisle has done deals in other leagues. They're financing the NWSL deal in Seattle, which you and I talked about earlier this week. Mm-hmm. They were in on Manchester United at one point in terms of the deal that eventually ended up going to Jim Ratcliffe. Carlisle wants to do more in sports and spent months negotiating, trying to talk with the NBA about the structure of this deal and could not get that done. From what I understand, Carlisle still wants to be doing more in sports. I do think it's noteworthy, however, that whatever it was in Carlisle's portfolio, conflicts of interest that the NBA saw, deal points specifically in this particular transaction with the Timberwolves, I don't know all the details. But I do think it is noteworthy that as so many private equity funds and other forms of institutional capital stream into sports and stream into the NBA, that on this particular deal, Carlisle and the NBA seemed unable to reach an agreement on a structure that worked for both of them.
And let me just remind the audience, you're listening to The Sporticast, a soliloquy by Eben Novi Williams. Point number two, Eben, delineate. Number two, what else do people need to know?
Oh, we're going straight through my points.
Absolutely. You're on a roll. Why would I stop you?
The Timberwolves owner, Glenn Taylor, I have heard, I think you have a lot in conversations in the past few years about what his end game is here. Did he even want to sell? He had a deal in place with Daniel Strauss back in 2019 or 2020, Scott, I think, to buy this team. That fell apart. He ended up choosing, after another auction, ending up with this very bizarre deal with Alex and Mark Lowry that, again, is structured over the course of 4 years, and they have to keep raising money because they didn't have it at the start. It's unclear to a lot of people in and around the NBA what Glenn Taylor actually really wants to come out of this, whether he wanted to sell the team, whether he just wanted three more years of control by doing a deal this way instead of cash offers that you and I both understand were on the table at the time this deal was done. Does he, obviously looking back now, the $1.5 billion price looks like he's not getting fair market value for sure now? Is he feeling differently about it now? I do think that there are a number of questions about what Glenn Taylor's actual real motivations are here and what he wants to happen relative to what's going on at the league level.
While you bring smarts, I'll just bring a little entertainment and humor. Has anybody reached out to Byron Allen? That is my question.
That is not your joke, to be fair, Scott.
I was going to say, I don't remember, who was that, Alex Sherman? Alex Sherman, I don't remember, but somebody made it. It's not a sale unless Byron, yeah, so. Yeah, I was going to footnote, thank you very much for even thinking that I would steal somebody's joke like that, because we know they're listeners of the show, and I don't need that phone call or text message going, you know, a little credit on the joke would be nice, but I thought it was such a good joke that I would utilize it here. I thought it was a good spot to insert a Byron Allen piece of comedy.
Yeah, and then the number third three. Thing, real quick, which we have touched on, just how weird and abnormal this whole thing was at the beginning, right? We see, as you said, we see path to control often. Sometimes you see deals that are done in multiple sets or multiple tranches. But to have this deal where it was clear that Mark and Alex did not have the money originally, they have been continuously trying to raise to reach deadlines. They had a deadline at the end of 2022 that they got right at the end. They had a deadline at the end of 2023 that they hit right at the end. We're talking at the end of the deadline in 2024, and they seem to be kind of on edge about where exactly this money is coming
from.
Are
they, or we just think they're on edge? I mean, I can't believe that they would have gotten to this point knowing that there were questions, at least at the NBA levels,
yeah,
like not feeling great that would be approved as is, that they don't have, I would call plan B, but since it's the T-Wolves, plan T,
we'll
to
see.
Replace Carlisle.
They said, Alex and reps for Alex and Mark told us this week that they still anticipated to be closing on time.
Yeah.
So obviously there is some feeling there and some negotiations and maybe
give
some
me the
other,
odds of the outcome. Odds of outcome of close on time versus extension versus doesn't happen. Which
one
you put in,
I mean,
first?
I wouldn't just even begin to try to handicap.
No, I
that.
Think they're going
to
close on time. I do.
I
would be really, really surprised that if they don't have some sort of backup to replace Carlisle.
And it would be if they fail to close on time, if this deal falls apart, and again, I'm big if this deal falls apart, that is a catastrophe, like an all-time business team transaction swing and a miss for both of those guys. And we'll see
especially
if it does.
Especially at that number, they're going to be kicking themselves later on because, like you said, you put that team on the market again right now, I would think you're going to get significantly more than 1.5.
And I think that I don't think it's a stretch to think that moving forward, the NBA will never allow a transaction structured in this way where the buyers are for 4 years continuously raising money and sometimes at higher valuations than the actual deal point. I don't think we would see the NBA sign off on a deal like this in the future.
Worst deal structure, A, Angel City, B, T-Wolves. Original Angel City, B, T-Wolves as is.
Yeah, very obviously very different. I mean, we're talking about the structure of the deal
versus
the
structure
of the ownership.
But in both cases, we said the league would not allow this to happen again.
Yeah, and yeah, the NBA was not a vastly different league than it is now 4 years ago, although valuations have gone up quite a bit. Yeah, this is just a peculiar one, and we obviously don't have all the answers here. But
I think it's a little different in that we're just into this private capital sort of thing. Like people sorting through different issues. When bring a specific deal to the table, you can set guardrails and guidelines, but when you present the actual terms of a deal, you may have one side thinking of that it will adhere to rules, and then the leagues or the teams are like, nah, not really. You know, somebody's going to raise an objection, for some particular reason.
And we often make reference to the various ways in which the NFL gatekeeps its ownership ranks differently than other leagues. This is a good example.
Cash, please.
Of the NFL would
single
never,
owner cash, please.
Would never have allowed a deal of this structure. When I'm talking about the Timberwolves, would never have allowed a deal of this structure to make it pass the approval of the league. That's for sure.
All right. Well, I think the whole thing is madness, and it happens to be March. That's a great segue. Thank you very much. Yes, yes, yes. Thank you very much. Still disappointed we're not getting Kareem Abdul-Jabbar at Indiana State. The Sycamores are not there.
Yeah.
I see the committee getting lambasted. Good word, right? They're not just getting criticized. They're getting lambasted for this Virginia, and I have no idea. I think the last Virginia player I can name, I was going to say Ralph Sampson, but it would probably be Curtis Staples. Is that right? Virginia Curtis Staples?
I don't know. I'm trying to think if I can name a single one.
I almost had Chris Corciani and Roddy Monroe, but then I was like, no, that's NC State. By the way, near my hometown, Tom Gugliotta, Walt Whitman High School, NC State star. I'm like, Virginia, Yeah, outside of Samson, I think I'm done at Curtis Staples, but they got trounced right in that play-in round.
Yeah, it couldn't have worked out worse for the committee, for everyone to say that Virginia didn't deserve to be in it, and then for Virginia to get the doors blown off in the first four. They missed 19 straight shots across the end of the first half and the start of the second half yesterday.
That's not good. God,
I mean, that's a blinking red light of maybe this is not one of the 68 best teams in the country.
Here's the question.
Yeah.
Let's say they didn't get in, and I'm going to segue on you here, but I mean, it's all connected. But let's say they didn't get in and they got an invitation to the NIT. Would they have gone? Nobody else seems to want to.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal making across sports, media, and entertainment.
And that is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
It's a great question. The NIT is, and we can talk about the NIT later, but whew, what a tough spot the NIT is in.
Ceased to exist.
Players don't seem to want to play in it. The transfer portal opens essentially right before the tournament starts, so players who know that they're leaving want to get a head start on that. Coaches who aren't playing in the tournament also want to get a head start on the transfer portal. The NIT is no longer at Madison Square Garden. The teams are backing out left and right. Fox is in talks. Seems like it may be wanting to launch a postseason tournament of its own next year, featuring schools from the conference the conferences that it has rights to. Everything about where the NIT sits right now is in danger, and we can stop talking about that because it's not the important tournament happening right now.
But for those who do not know the history of the NIT, it should be noted. For all you youngins like you and those younger than you who only watch YouTube and utilize Snapchat, you should probably know that at one point it was the tournament.
That was
the national championship.
Yeah.
Like, people may not know. So what do I need to know the NCAA tournament? Again, I'm going back to it. I'm interested on the women's side.
I think that's one of the biggest business stories we have right now coming into this event is the massive commercial growth and the massive interest on the women's side. The NCAA, as we talked about earlier this year, or maybe that was last year, signed a new ESPN deal. That ESPN deal covers all of its championships that is not the men's basketball tournament, so includes the women's basketball tournament. That's a $900 million deal, $920 million over 8 years, a significant jump up from what they were getting right now. I'm already hearing rumbles that the women's tournament is undervalued in that new deal, in addition to how undervalued it was in the previous deal.
Yeah, wait until they outdraw somebody else. You're damn right. you wait until these.
Yeah. So I think that's a huge one, obviously. This is the CBS Turner deal is where the NCAA makes the vast majority of its revenue. The men's tournament, if you combine the TV and the tickets and the sponsorships, is 80-90% of the NBA, the NCAA's $1.3 billion worth of revenue. So this is still the most important thing on the calendar for the NCAA. But the other big storyline to me, Scott, is there was another antitrust lawsuit filed this week. Clemson just filed suit against the ACC, kind of like what Florida State did.
Thank God for Mike McCann, because I cannot keep track. Like, we just have to start keeping a lawsuit tracker. Yeah.
Amen. And if you work at the NCAA, you probably also can't keep track of it. Mm-hmm. The sands of power and of influence in college sports are shifting so dramatically.
No terra firma. That's what you're
saying. And who knows, honestly, who knows what the NCAA tournament, men's tournament, and women's tournaments look like in 5 years?
Oh, you and I believe in some way, shape, or form that there's got to be some sort of privatization of this thing. Like, there's got to be a 40-50 team pullout in some way, shape. I don't know what the structure is going to be.
Agreed.
I don't know who the capital partners are going to be. But when we have a fully professionalized system, you just realize that it's how do we wring every dollar. You have all the big teams in certain conferences saying, we want more of the revenue pie. People tune into the SEC to see Alabama. They tune in to see Auburn. They don't tune in to see whatever pick at SEC team you don't watch all that much, or that gets a game on Tuesday or Wednesday.
Vanderbilt, yeah.
Okay, Vandy, yeah, the Harvard of the South. So, I mean, we're seeing this already. There is no – remember, like, the little – what was it? The Pac-12 and the ACC had that cute little – handshaky thingy where they were going to work together, and it was like, no, we're in this together, yeah. Right? Where that lasted, to utilize the vocabulary word ephemeral, I don't even think does it
it's fleeting
justice. Yeah, but I mean, it was even worse than fleeting. What's shorter than ephemeral or fleeting? It was a flicker. Come on. So, I mean, there's no brotherhood, there's no work together, there's how can we best partner with you to make the most money for the big group. And by the way, even then, the bigger teams are going to want more money.
And a lot of these changes, I think, will happen first in football.
Football,
but
yeah.
But maybe it is impossible to separate football from men's basketball in some ways. So we'll see what happens with the men's basketball tournament. The thing I keep coming back to, and the sad truth of it, I think, is that in pursuit of a much more just financial structure for athletes, we're going to have to go through some things that we maybe don't like. There's a chance that the NCAA tournament, as we know it, the structure that we love, where Fairleigh Dickinson can come in and beat Purdue and can beat another SEC team and Cinderella's and 68 teams.
But am I just a curmudgeon? Because those teams never go anywhere. Like, it goes bad. You get to the Final Four, you can say you love the upsets. But let's be honest. When you get to the Final Four, the Final Eight, you really just want the blue bloods. You want to see the big teams playing. You want to see the best teams going at it. You want a cute one first round upset. You'll give a sweet 16 if you can do two. But after that, I have no use to see St. Peter's, and the Peacocks keep playing.
Yes, but I also think most fans prefer the first two rounds to the final two rounds, right?
It's wall to wall. Yes.
Exactly. There's something amazing for a lot of sports fans about the next 10 days, March Madness specifically.
It's gluttony.
And I do think there's...
It's gluttony. Yeah. And yes. We love nothing else. Sports fans love nothing else in our chicken wings and our sports consumption other than gluttony.
And there's a chance that is going to change in the future as all these things shift. And one of the big things underlining this shift is the fact that athletes for so long have gotten a raw end of the deal about the way college sports is structured. And I do have this fear that a lot of fans, I think you're kind of already seeing it. You're certainly seeing it from coaches and administrators, are pushing back against these changes because they don't like the way it manifests itself in the sport that they love. They want to see UT, Texas Austin playing Texas Tech in the Big 12, and they're not going to get to see that anymore. And they're really upset about that.
As you and I have discussed, but they do have Georgia coming to town.
Yes, you're right.
I mean, that is a mega event. By the way, same weekend as the F1 race. So if you don't have your hotel, get it now. I have no stakes in any hotels in Austin, Texas. Just letting you know, if you're eyeing either one of those events, book early, book often. But, I mean, would I trade sort of a one-off Texas Tech, Texas, to have Georgia come to town on F1 weekend and have Austin be the centerpiece of the sports world? Hell yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and maybe that's true. So that's the end of my rant. I'm just saying that, I hope
that... Well, that was easy.
I hope that fans who lament the way college sports is changing are able to separate those changes from the fact that we are getting to a much more just system and probably more fair business structure for the athletes, the young men and young women that create the games themselves.
You mean the student athletes?
The student athletes.
Yes. All right. I mean, what better way then to finish this off than by talking about sort of something that came across and we're like, wait a minute, like, this is what they're already doing, but it really encapsulates everything that, our friends over at JP Morgan Chase, they are creating a sports investment banking group. Now, I have to say, having, known Eric Manel for a while, I'm like, wait a minute, don't they already have a sports investment banking group? Like, JP Morgan does a lot of work with teams and leagues and, private wealth. I just thought they had this. But I guess if they're saying to the world, well, sports is an asset class, like, you and I know that. That's why these things are happening. But to have it crystallized under Jamie Dimon's roof that, sports as an asset class, different parts of the bank, investment banking, commercial banking, private banking, they're all getting together on the auspices of, by the way, a global Eric. Like I said, I mentioned Eric, we know him. I do not know Gian Piero Sammartino. Yeah, he's based in London, so those be the co-heads of the group. Yep. But on a global basis, sports as an asset class, look no further than EPL, look no further than what we're talking about, the NCAA tournament, what we're talking about T-Wolves, what we're talking about private equity, we're talking about individual investors. It's just a perfect encapsulation of where we are and where we're headed.
I would love to know how, before these changes happen, how much conversation there was.
It had to be a lot.
JP Morgan,
it had to be.
Across their investment banking, then you have their private bank, you have their high-end net worth individuals, then you have the M&A advisory, sports advisory practice, M&A divisions. There's a whole bunch. There's many different parts of the JP Morgan or JP Morgan Chase umbrella that is doing deals, often involving the very same people, same clients, doing things in different corners. And I would imagine that creating this bigger structure under Eric and under John Piero does allow for easier communication, a lot more
maybe just visibility at the start, right? Maybe you're just maybe you're just accentuating to prospective clients and current clients that we have a 360 view, as you probably do as well. How can we help you with the breadth of what we offer?
Yeah, which just makes perfect sense. So we help you, billionaire Scott Soshnick, buy this soccer team, and you're building a new stadium? Great. Well, we can maybe help you with the financing on that, or we can advise you on finding the financing. Oh, you're looking to sell a 10% stake of the team we helped you buy? Oh, yeah, we've got some people in our high net worth individual area, or we can connect you with some private equity funds who might want to buy that 10% stake for you. Again, there's just a ton of overlap, and finding an easier, simpler way to codify how all those things work together seems like it's really smart. And other banks have done this. I imagine other banks will do something similar in the future. But having one or two people at the top, these co-MDs or whatever their titles are, to be the faces of that, the first person that people in the industry call, I think that's going to be very valuable.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, and I know you will, and I'll give you about 20 seconds. Not 20 seconds, a long time to talk. I'll give you 10 seconds. Do you have your phone to Google quickly?
Yeah, sure.
But am I wrong? Am I wrong? Please tell me. Are we just not like a few months removed from Goldman Sachs doing the exact same thing, sort of encapsulating different divisions of the bank where they can help with sports transactions? And we know, obviously, they have people there who do stadium finance. You Googled? You got it?
I did. How many months did you say?
I said a few months.
A few months, yeah. Well, it's September 2023. Yeah,
that counts. So it's a few months.
6 months. Yeah.
6 months. That counts. Inside 6 months counts. That counts.
Banking giant Goldman Sachs creating a global sports franchise division.
There we go.
Interest in sports team investments continues to grow.
Yep. There we go. Sports as asset
Wall Street
class.
Journal was the first to report that.
Who wrote it at the Journal? I'm just curious.
I closed it. It was Anna Maria Andreitis.
Okay, so I think it probably came from the finance desk then, and not sort of the sports folks.
Yeah,
that we know. With a little check the bottom of that story if you can, with assistance by or a little reporting by.
I can't
I'm just
see
curious.
The bottom, sadly.
All right. Anyway, but yeah, there we go. All right. So, Goldman Sachs did it. J.P. Morgan. I think it's 90% nomenclature. Like we should ask these folks. I'm saying, okay, what really operationally what changes? Because we know that all these divisions of the banks have been working in concert.
Already doing it.
Yeah, this is like sort of. So are you just crystallizing it to say we have an official sports? Make it easy for somebody that may not real. I'm just trying to figure out what is the main purpose. I can tell you this though, because I have our metrics here. That story we wrote yesterday about the simple. Hey, guess what? JP Morgan Chase is doing. Huge interest. I can tell you that the folks out there who you always, how many times do you hear this? Oh, Eben, I'd love to work in sports, or my son or my daughter or my, want to work in sports. I can tell you the resumes were flying, they were flying in for people wanting to be a part of this. So maybe just you and I are too close to it. Could that be that folks didn't recognize that this sort of work was going on? They needed an official title of a sports department. I'm just wondering. I don't know.
Yeah, sometimes you just have to know who to send the resume to in some ways,
I guess.
Right?
And, and this, sorry, Eric.
another
sorry,
another
John Piero,
thing this
you
does
I haven't
is,
met. Sorry,
is create that. Yeah, for sure.
Anyway, the only thing worse we can do is probably give out their emails on the air. Should we do that right now?
No, let's not do that.
I will give out your Twitter handle.
He is Scott Soshnick.
There you go. You took
you can
the lead.
Find
good
him
for you
on Twitter
good
at Soshnick. I am Evan Novi Williams on good Twitter at Novi_Williams. Show is produced by Aaron Greenewald. Yeah. Thank you very much to Aaron.
Make it easier. I'm not going to
bother you too much. Digital media editor Cora Beltman would like you to know that you can follow this show at Sportacast, which is the hub of the Sportico Media Network.